Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Greetings, Grapple fans. Welcome to another installment of the Pro Wrestling Index podcast right here on the Anfield Index podcast channel, where tonight it will be a fun-filled affair as we get to discuss Battleground and I get to vent my spleen a little bit on that. But we also have some positives later in the night, which we will move on to being Raw and SmackDown. But I won't not be doing that all by myself. Oh, no, 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 no. I have to bring someone else along to the party. And I had to make somebody else suffer Battleground just like me, because it wouldn't be fair if it was only me that had to sit through that. So here to hopefully keep my chin up and keep me right the way through to the end is my audio tag team partner, Mr. Mo Chatra. Good evening, Mo.
Evening, goodness. You're sounding so excited about covering Battleground, Andy.
Well, we did. Look, I tried to be as positive as I possibly could last week when we previewed it. You know, I was trying to look on the, you know, the flip side of the coin, and I wasn't enthralled at the prospect of it. I was saying, well, you know, expectations were low, and how many times over the past year have our expectations been low for a WWE pay-per-view, and they far exceeded them by actually delivering when we least expected it. I don't think we can really say that about Battleground, though, can we?
Oh, no, we can't, no. Listeners, we previewed the show in great detail last week, and by the end of it, you can't say that we didn't warn you. We told you it wouldn't be the greatest show of all time, and that's quite the understatement, but we'll explain why in the next hour or so.
Yeah, and not only was it not good, it resulted in me ending my subscription to the WWE Network.
Wow.
And I'm not sure, some people thought that was perhaps a bit extreme. I don't know about you, Mo. Do you think I slightly over-egged it?
Well, it's a bit like those football fans who get so frustrated at their team that they throw their season ticket at the feet of a manager that they really despise. It's that sort of equivalent. But no, it's not something that you're unique in terms of your view of the show. It was universally panned. It was within the Wrestling Observer poll for the show, it got less than 2% thumbs up, which is almost a record low for a WWE pay-per-view amongst Wrestling Observer readers. And you know, given the amount of bad shows that WWE has put out over the years, that's saying something. It was very hard work, long 3 hours and 10 minutes that I'll never get back. But it wasn't all bad, let's be honest. But you know, there were one or two redeeming factors, and you know, we'll explain what those are. But they were certainly overwhelmed by plenty of negatives.
Yeah, I wouldn't go so far as to, you know, as to me running through the curtain and, you know, tearing up my subscription in front of Vince McMahon at the gorilla position. It wasn't quite that. But what I will say is, look, Battleground for me is easily the worst WWE pay-per-view of the year so far. You have to say so far.
I would agree.
In fact, I'll say for me, it's right up there as possibly the worst WWE pay-per-view I've ever seen. And I've seen some crap. I really have. But this was just so boring and stupid and pointless. And it just caps off a couple of terrible months for SmackDown. It really does. I think the television has been woeful. But Battleground for me, that was it. That was the final straw for me and my $9.99 a month for the WWE. And now I'm sure that Vince has got a long line of sycophants all ready to kiss his ass and tell him that everything's great and all his decisions are correct, that repetitive television's just fine, that flat elongated pay-per-views, you know, every fortnight sending them out, oh, that's genius, that, you know, a logical booking, that's the future. Making any special attractions that you may have seem like just another guy on the roster. Oh, that's inspired, that, absolutely inspired. And those fans in the arena that are silent half the time, they must be wrong. And they're wrong to boo those guys who we want them to cheer. And most of all, those people who no longer watch Raw and SmackDown on a regular occurrence, you're not watching TV anymore, they don't know what they're missing. They don't know what they're doing because they're wrong and we're right. And everything we do is right. And you'll see it in the end, if there's any of you left by then. But in all honesty, Mo, at the end of Battleground, I asked myself, why am I paying for this? Why am I paying $9.99 a month to watch this? I was asking myself that question after I'd sat through 3 hours and 10 minutes of it. And I've got to say, after an hour and 40 minutes, I felt like I'd already been watching for 3 hours. That's how bad it was. But then I made the mistake of going back and watching the pre-show, which was effectively 50 minutes of promos and then a match that even had a promo video package halfway through it. And in that match, Ty Dillinger, who'd come up from NXT and was getting over with the fans, you know, he's quite hot with the fans, so they took him off TV. And then here, on the pre-show, they make him lose to a jobber. And I was just, I honestly just thought, what the hell am I paying? I can't justify paying $9.99 a month. I just can't justify it anymore. So that was it. It was literally at that moment, at the end of that pre-show, after sitting through that pay-per-view, that I went onto my account and ended my subscription. Done.
Yeah, no, I totally understand exactly where you're coming from. I mean, it's a kind of frustration that I expressed last week. You know, I talked about feeling like it's a bit of a chore sitting through WWE television these days, that it's not really something that you sit there and think, right, I'm really looking forward to this and really going to enjoy it. You watch it just out of habit more than anything. And, you know, it's the same sort of feeling with these pay-per-views as well. But the thing is, because it's match after match, you know, you can't forward through most of it like you can with TV. So, you know, you have to sit there and watch it. But no, I totally get your frustration. It's something I completely share as well. And, you know, I'm just hopeful that, you know, there's some good that can come out of what was a show that was completely panned on social media. It had such a strong negative reaction on Twitter, on Facebook, on YouTube. You know, WWE's got to really take heed of these comments. They can't just think that, oh, well, you know, people are moaning, but why are they moaning for? They've never had it so good, like you just said. And, you know, that kind of arrogance is something I think can really cost them. I mean, they've got a TV deal that's expiring in a couple of years or less. And their ratings since they last renewed it have gone down significantly, and there's no signs whatsoever that they'll go up. If anything, they'll go down even further in the next couple of years. Their ratings for the UK, which I'll be writing about in Total Wrestling Cheap Plug, have plummeted in the last 2 or 3 years. Elsewhere in other countries, ratings have gone down massively. The one thing that they've got going for them, pretty much the only thing, is the fact that their subscription numbers for the network are very good, still nowhere near what they were expecting. They thought by this point in time, they'd have around 3 million plus subscribers. They've actually got something like 1.4 to 1.6, depending on whether it's a big show month or not. And you know, that kind of number is not great. I mean, their revenues are huge. Their revenues are over $600 million. And to put that into context, you know, that's more money than pretty much every single football club in the world, with the exception of Man United. So that's how much money WWE is making. But their profit margins are low because their network costs are so high and cost of television are so high. And the thing is, there's only so much you can go trading on the goodwill of the fan base. And, you know, then it will become a case of, you know, living off of the fumes that are there, but the substance is not there. And when that goes and he's gone for a sustained period of the time, then people walk away and not come back. And, you know, the only thing that's propping him up right now is their subscription numbers. But, you know, I'm sure you're not the only one that felt, right, this is it. Why do I bother with this? That's $9.99 I can put towards something. Anything would be better than what it's currently being used for. And, you know, we'll just have to see if there's any difference. But as I speculated last week, I think that things might even get worse rather than get better. But the only thing that can turn things around is a really strong negative reaction from the fans. And the strongest way of doing that is to cancel that subscription.
Yeah, I've been a loyal fan for a long, long time. You know, I got into it around 89, 90, and I just, out of curiosity, I watched, and I couldn't help but continue watching. And I watched through some ups and downs of, you know, being there through the best parts of the, you know, the record era of the business. And I've seen them in their, you know, low ebbs when they were close to going out of business. And I still enjoyed parts of it then. But what I think the real frustration, and look, you know, this is not me just, you know, just throwing it away. I started subscribing a couple of years ago when it first started, was first available in the UK. I started subscribing and I really enjoyed it. And, you know, the network itself, it is a good thing. There's a lot of really good content on there. But I think once you've had access for a certain amount of time, you've pretty much exhausted a lot of what's there. And then you're into, you know, the ongoing content, the new stuff. And that's not too great. And my concern is as well is they'll turn to the roster and start pointing out people. It must be their fault. People are turning away because they're not interested in this guy and that guy and this guy. And that's not the case. It's not the performer's fault, because they've got arguably the most talented roster that in depth of talent that they've ever had. And I do mean that. But the storylines, the writing, the fact that we've got 5 hours of television to fill every week, it's just too much. It's so repetitive. The storylines are so dull and boring and unimaginative that we get in the same stuff week after week after week after week, that it's saturation point. You know, something's not special. You know, steak and chips, it might be great. You might love it. But if you have steak and chips every night for tea, it starts to get a bit dull. And then when you have steak and chips for breakfast and dinner as well as your tea, you know, then you've really had enough of steak and chips and you don't want to look at steak and chips no more. And that's what it kind of feels like with the WWE at the moment. It's just the same stuff repeated week after week after week. Pay-per-views every 2 weeks. It's just too much. They've oversaturated their own product. And I think they need a real they need to sit down and have a really good think about what direction they're going to take this, and perhaps even look at the types of writers that they bring in. I mean, you could do a whole show on how they write, because you know it's been discussed that they bring in TV writers rather than wrestling writers, and that product needs more wrestling minds than it does TV minds, because wrestling fans like wrestling product. They're not in it for really badly acted and badly scripted backstage segments that are ridiculously hokey. That's not what we're in it for. So I feel like I've had a good rant anyway.
No, top stuff. You're right. There's plenty of things you can really criticize at WWE about, but they've just got this certain mindset about how they need to produce the product, and it's not new. I mean, it's something they've been at for a good 6-7 years now, and there's no real incentive or motivation for them to mix things up drastically, because their revenues are at a record high because of the TV deals and the network subscriptions. But the thing that will really affect the way they do things is if their ratings, when it comes to at the time of negotiating their next TV deal, are at the levels they're at now or even lower. And if they are at lower levels, then the deals that they'll be offered will likely be less than what they're making at the moment, and potentially significantly less. TV landscape's changing significantly.
It'd be interesting to see when them negotiations start, because like you say, you know, that deal comes up in a couple of years. I would imagine it'd be at least a year beforehand where they start discussing the whys and the wherefores.
Well, that's right. These things normally do start about a year or so, sometimes even further in advance than that. So obviously, at the point at which they need to sit down at a negotiating table, whether it's with their current provider or with their competitors, like Fox or whoever else, they need to be going into those discussions, those negotiations, in the strongest possible position. Coming to that table with a track record of declining ratings is not good for getting the best deal. So I would suspect that at the very latest, WrestleMania next year onwards, they're going to be going big time to try and pop ratings on a week-to-week basis. Now, does that mean that the TV will necessarily be great? Not necessarily. They might just look to come up with ideas which, you know, can bring eyeballs to the TV screens, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the product will be any good. They might be doing things like celebrity matches and having people that are non-wrestlers working freak show matches just for the curiosity factor.
God help us.
And, there's all of that kind of stuff. There will be some desperation there. And, you know, they'll be getting some indicators. They'll be sending out the feelers to say, okay, right, our deal was due in a couple of years. Where do you think we are? TV deals are their biggest source of revenue ahead of WWE network money at the moment.
Yeah, they're going to need to massively up the game. I mean, let's start breaking down background here. We actually have to do this. Quickly on that pre-show match, Aiden English defeating Ty Dillinger. I mean, one more. What the hell is Ty Dillinger doing on the pre-show and being kept off TV for so long when he was so over with the fans? I don't understand that one. And him losing to Aiden English, I can't get my head around that.
Well, Ty Dillinger's crime is that he got over without the WWE intending for him to get over. So, a case of the Daniel Bryans there, unfortunately, for him. And, they're just trying to kill him dead, that's the kind of modus operandi, is that, you know, people that get over when they're not supposed to, they'll try and cut them off at the legs and try and ruin their momentum. And you know,
knock them down so we can build them up.
Yeah.
Just
insanity. I mean, it can be as petty as Vince thinking, right, when the referees are counting wrestlers when they're outside the ring, I don't like this chant of 10, 10, 10. And it ruins the whole drama behind a referee counting. So that's all Ty Dillinger's fault, obviously. So let's bury him 6 feet under and ruin his career. And that'll kill those chants. That'll do it. So, and that, you know, it sounds incredibly petty, incredibly childish. But believe it or not, that's how decisions are made in the WWE. And trust me, that really is how it works. And it might just seem completely ludicrous, completely pathetic, but until you've heard people that have worked in that environment explain the way in which decisions are made, only then will you be able to believe stuff like that. But literally, that's the sort of thing that can prompt that kind of thought process and those types of decisions. Because otherwise, Dillinger, you know, should be one of the more pushed stars on the show. He's already over. He's charismatic. He's a good worker and cut a decent promo. So why not just try and ride the crest of that wave and make the most of it? And, you know, if he becomes a big, big star, you know, he'll make money. And isn't that what the WWE should be doing? Is trying to make stars and trying to cash in on them and have that nice churn of talent coming through and becoming, you know, players for the WWE. And that's something they've really got an absence of. So yeah, again, somebody who started to get over, but they had to bury him. And as you say, losing to a glorified jobber in Aiden English, who I actually do like. I don't
know, like, I do too.
My guilty pleasure.
Yeah, he's got charisma. It's just I don't think he's necessarily a single star, but you know, he's got some charisma. Yeah, he's got something about his character and everything like that. He doesn't particularly look the part. You know, he looks like he could do with a trip outside once in a while. You know, a bit of vitamin K.
You know, he's got a role to play on that roster. You know, it's a comedy gimmick, really, and with comedy gimmicks, you know, there's only so much. You know, it's not a headline type gimmick by any means, but you know, there's certainly a role for that kind of a gimmick, and that's all well and good. But you know, he's somebody who hasn't really been pushed in any kind of meaningful way, and the fact that Dillinger had to put him over really shows where Ty Dillinger is in the pecking order on SmackDown, and what it shows is it's not very high.
Yeah. Sound booking for a sound future, and it's not the last time we'll talk about bizarre booking on this show. The one positive of Battleground was the first match of the event, the New Day and the Usos. New Day win the titles, as we suspected they probably would, as a way to kind of freshen up and keep this. This feud going long enough so that they could stretch it out to SummerSlam, perhaps even one more show after that. But this was a good match, and for me, this was the only good match on the night, really.
Well, I'd actually go so far as to say it was a great match. I thought it turned into a really hot match towards the end. Some great near falls, and the crowd was up on its feet. In fact. In that kind of closing stretch, and you know, it was a very well worked match, and I think I did predict, perhaps you did as well, Andy, that the New Day would win the titles, and you know, so they did, and it was a good victory. I mean, does it necessarily do anything significant for the tag team division on SmackDown? Not really. There's no real depth there, other than these two teams. You got the fashion police or whatever they call this week. And, you know, you've got a couple other teams, and that's really about it. And, you know, that kind of lack of numbers and depth is what makes for a very weak roster. And that's what, again, happens when you split the tag roster in two, when there's not even, you know, enough sufficient depth when it was all together as one before the roster split.
So, yeah, I mean, you mentioned the crowd there. Yeah, the crowd were into this. It was a good, it was a really good match. It was fun. It's a Philly crowd. You know, Philly are notorious. I mean, that was the home of ECW, so it's notorious for having a rowdy crowd. And they were into this. They were enjoying it. And they were up. The next matchup, Shinsuke Nakamura against Baron Corbin. They were hugely into Nakamura, cheering him as he came out. But this match started to take the edge off the crowd, I felt, because this was not good. These two did not gel at all. And the finish was, you know, just such a schmoz. I didn't enjoy this at all.
No, it was predictably average. And that's perhaps being kind. You know, Nakamura obviously has a great entrance, super charismatic. Corbin's on the up. You know, he's not a bad worker by any means, but you know, he's still learning the ropes. He's still green to an extent. So he's far from the finished article. So you could never expect this to be a great match or anything close to that. But you know, at its best, it could have still turned out to be almost a good match, and it really wasn't. You know, I found it quite boring. You know, it heated up towards the end in the last 90 seconds, couple of minutes before the DQ finish. But no, it really didn't do much for me. And again, you know, show that they've done a terrible job of booking Nakamura. When he came in, had massive momentum coming off of a great run in NXT, and since he's debuted on SmackDown, he's just been another guy. And yep, to go from being a superstar to just another guy in the space of 2 or 3 months, or even less time than that.
See, I wouldn't say he's perceived by the crowd as just another guy as such. Because I mean, they still, you know, they sing along to his song as he's coming out. They're massively into him. I think it's just the way that they construct the matches, that the matches are also 50-50, that it makes him seem, when he's in the ring, bell to bell, he's just another guy. And that's my concern with how they're using him, really. Because NXT were a lot smarter than that. You know, the way that they constructed the matches, as well as the, you know, that worked around his character. They were just so much smarter, and they capitalized on the, you know, that charisma and that sort of, that special something that he has, and the crowd's involvement with him. It boils down to that. NXT was so much smarter than the main roster are with talent.
I mean, Nakamura's very gifted. One of the elite workers in the business, and his great strength by far in a way is what he can do in the ring from bell to bell, and yet they've not really showcased him in the right way since he came into SmackDown. And if you think back to his match last year at the NXT prior to WrestleMania, that classic match with Sami Zayn, it was amazing. It really was, wasn't it? And the reaction to it was amongst the best we've ever seen on a WWE show.
I think I had that as my favourite match of last year. Thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. It was fantastic.
Oh, it was. And you know, that's the sort of stuff he's capable of. I was watching a match he had with AJ Styles for New Japan Pro Wrestling just 2 or 3 months prior to that Sami Zayn match from January 2016. And that was actually even better than the Sami Zayn match. And incredible, the reactions to it. And, you know, that's the sort of stuff that Nakamura can do. He can have amazing moments in the ring. He can, you know, assemble matches, the quality of which you very rarely see out of people. You know, and that's his greatest strength. And the fact that they don't showcase him in that kind of way with the right kind of opponents to have these killer matches on TV and on these pay-per-views just makes you wonder what on earth is going on in the minds of these people. It's so easy. You don't even have to come up with fantastic storylines. You just say, okay, you know, there you go. There's the ring. There's your opponent. Now work your magic and, you know, show everyone why you are what you are. And that's one of the best in the business. And yet he's given little opportunity to do that. And when you're put in the ring with a green guy in Baron Corbin, then, you know, you're certainly not going to be allowed to showcase your strengths. So yeah, again, strange booking.
Yeah, it's for me, what this whole event, a recurring theme of this whole event was anything that was in the ring, for me, it was just kind of, it was back and forth and it was a series of moves. That's all it was. It was moves. It was kicks, punches, some wrestling holds. There wasn't any storytelling. There was no storyline there, and that is something they're desperately lacking. And that is a concern because you've got some great storytellers on the roster, and that was a bit of a recurring theme I felt for the night. And then the next one up, you know, this fatal five way elimination match for the women's. The SmackDown women's division, you know, to become the number one contender and fight Naomi at SummerSlam. This was, again, another one booked really oddly. I just surprised. I mean, there's one thing having a surprise, but Natalia to win, you know, beating Charlotte the way that she did at the end, it was. Unless this is leading to something dramatic with Charlotte, and the indications on TV at the moment are that it's not exactly heading in that direction, it's strange the way that they've booked Charlotte, and even more odd in that Natalia is put over as the winner of this match and then is going to be going on to face Naomi at SummerSlam. It's on the face of it, as things stand, that was an odd one. After it was an odd end to a very dull match.
Yeah. Again, very, very questionable booking. They've completely made a hash of Charlotte Flair on SmackDown. Came into it as one of the biggest stars from Raw, male or female. And, you know, she's absolutely booked as just another body on the roster. And, you know, she shouldn't be that. She's the most talented female worker on the SmackDown brand, you know, came across as a bona fide star whilst she was on Raw. And I can understand that, you know, they perhaps felt that, you know, she'd been pushed so strongly and heavily for so long that they wanted to give others a chance, build others up. But they can still do that without having to bury Charlotte Flair. And I think that's what they've done. That's my view, that they have buried her. And I'm not quite sure exactly why. And when I look at her and I look into her eyes, I sense frustration, disappointment, possibly anger with the way in which she's been booked. She certainly doesn't seem to have that same glint in her eye she had when she was bossing things on Raw. So that's not great. As for the match itself, the first half of it was about as bad as you will ever see in a WWE ring. Lana, bless her, is working like somebody who's just been in wrestling school for about 2 weeks. You know, doesn't belong in a WWE ring on the main roster.
Not even an NXT ring.
No.
And that's not and her fault.
No, absolutely. I mean, she's a rookie. And even on NXT, it should just be house shows only, not even NXT TV. You know, Tamina's not much better. She, I cannot explain why she's on TV. She's not over. She's not a good worker. She's got no personality, no charisma, no interview skills, absolutely nothing. Nobody gives two shits about Tamina. So that's a completely bizarre one. She's just a waste of a roster spot, is Tamina. So that first half of the match where those two were the focal point, that was abysmal to the extreme. I thought the latter half of the match certainly picked up. And I thought the last couple of minutes actually were pretty decent, almost pretty good. But that didn't make up for what was a really, really poor first half of the contest. So overall, average at best. But again, disappointing. And once again, highlighted the fact that the women's roster shouldn't be split across Raw and SmackDown. It should be as one on one of the two shows.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And I've long stated that case as well. I think it would be better for the women's division overall, but that's for another day. Next up was arguably my biggest disappointment of the night, given the two guys involved. I was looking forward to seeing Kevin Owens and AJ Styles fight. This just didn't get going. It didn't seem to gel properly. I don't know. I don't know whether it's what they're being told out, you know, what they're being sent out with instruction wise, but this just didn't seem to work at all. It was a very disappointing match, and it ended bizarrely. I mean, what the hell was the ref bump for? Because it was inconsequential. It was absolutely inconsequential to the finish of the match, and went against the psychology of the way that the heel won. It's just utterly bizarre. Is what I would label that finish as, bizarre.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, that's the one match I thought, and I speculated last week, could easily be match of the night. And it wasn't even the match of the night. And, you know, in the end, I thought it was an okay match. I wouldn't call it a bad match. But given the two people that were involved, I mean, this should have been a WWE Match of the Year contender by the time it was all said and done. And it's not as if they were sent out and were made to rush through a match. They were given 18 minutes, which is plenty of time to have a phenomenal match. And these two can have a phenomenal match. But I think possibly the reason why is Owens might well have been injured. I did suggest last week that the reason for that surprise title change at MSG the other week might have been that Kevin Owens has an injury. And that apparently after the MSG show was then rubbished as speculation. But that's the only explanation I can come up with, because I just don't see how these two can have such a mediocre match. It'd be harder for them to have a mediocre match than it would be for them to have a great match, because they're so good. And yet there was something badly missing from this.
What about the ref bump? What the hell was the point of the ref bump?
Yeah,
for the heel to free himself from a submission move, yet not submit when the ref is knocked out. It just, yeah. It might be the old school in me, but that's it. I can't get my head around that. You know, it's the psychology of it. It defies all logic for what you do with pro wrestling and working a crowd.
Yeah. So what that was to me was a case of the two guys with their agent or producer. So for those that don't know, each of these matches has somebody like an Arn Anderson or a Fit Finlay or a Dean Malenko working with individuals or teams in matches to help them lay out a match. And what I kind of got from that is that they perhaps sat there with their agent and ran through a bunch of different scenarios for their match, either didn't agree or got confused. In the end, went out there with a rushed kind of planned for what the match would be, and then obviously as it played out, you know, it didn't make sense, because you're quite right, the ref bump just didn't play into the finish really, and you know, it always should, you know, otherwise don't do a ref bump. So that suggested to me there was a disjointed approach to laying the match out backstage for whatever reason. Who knows what the reason might have been, but you know, that was just a mess all round in that respect, and very, very disappointing given who was involved. You know, it should have been one of the more memorable WWE matches of the year, and it simply wasn't.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't. And like you said, to my mind, AJ Styles is the best in the business right now. You know, the crowds, you know, chanted him in, that they were up for him, that they were pretty flat before the match, but they were up for him. But I think this crowd, you know, this match really flattened that crowd back down. And if it didn't kill them off, then the next match absolutely did. Because John Cena beating Rusev in an absolutely pointless flag match that has got no real significance in this day and age. But this was 20 minutes of the most boring, pointless, dull wrestling I've ever seen. It was just mind-numbing. It was awful.
Yeah. John Cena is somebody who, you know, can certainly go out there and have a really, really good match. I mean, his track record over the last several years on WWE pay-per-views has been very, very good. He's had so many great matches. And one of his better opponents of recent times has been Rusev. But, you know, again, absolutely mind-boggling booking. You know, John Cena is a part-timer. In fact, just last week he was talking about how he's, you know, looking to wind down his career, in fact. So given that, wouldn't it make sense to put over the guy that is there on TV week in, week out, that will be around for more than a couple of years, that isn't looking to retire, in Rusev? And, you know, it would have been a great way, especially with the flags, to get some head of steam back behind Rusev, because obviously with injuries and other things, he's lost a bit of what he had a couple of years ago. So he's in desperate need of a spark, and this match could have provided that. But yet again, you know, arse backward booking results in John Cena getting a win that he absolutely didn't need. It does nothing for him. It doesn't make him any more over. It just was a pointless exercise. And granted, you know, there is a possibility that Cena might be facing Jinder Mahal at SummerSlam, which we'll explain
in the flag
a little
match.
Bit about in a moment. Yeah, possibly. But you know, he could still have gone into that match even with defeat to Rusev. So it's just one of these silly decisions again, which holds back yet another promising talent on the roster.
Yeah, maybe we could have a Punjabi prison flag match, you know, just to round up all the crap gimmicks that we can put together. But it
took me 10 years to forget the previous couple, and then
I sincerely hope we never see it again, but there you go, we'll get to that. Before we do, you know, just in case the crowd wasn't, you know, felt it wasn't on the floor feeling like going home, we had Sami Zayn against Mike Kanellis. Obviously I like Sami Zayn, the crowd like Sami Zayn, but no one really cared because this match doesn't mean anything, and Sami Zayn's been booked like a complete goof. And Mike Kanellis has come in with this questionable at best gimmick, him and Maria together. It's, yeah, I think the less said about this match, the better. It was okay, but it was just, I just didn't care.
Yeah, me neither. So let's move on to the next one.
I'm sorry, Sami, you're really good, but yeah, it's just the way you've been booked at the moment. So there you go. Yeah. So to really cap the night off, you know, the most interesting thing you can say happened all night long was we saw the Great Khali, and that in 3 hours and 10 minutes of pay-per-view is not a good sign, and it certainly wasn't in this. I mean, this was nearly half an hour. It was awful. It really was awful. It was stupid. This whole Punjabi prison thing is stupid. It's so massive. You know, people can't see. God knows what it was like for the crowd. I mean, it was hard enough to see with the cameras, you know, where they're pointing through the gaps. But for a crowd to look through two layers of that, and it's so high up, it just aesthetically must be difficult. And it was made completely pointless. And immediately it was just like, what the hell is the point of that, of that structure, when the Singh brothers come out and then immediately climb right through it?
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. It's just right up there with the Tower of Doom, or whatever it was called, that WCW once had 20-plus years ago, which was three cages stacked on top of each other. Just an awful idea, which was resulted in one of the worst matches in WCW history. And this wasn't really much better. It was a poor match. Jinder Mahal shouldn't be world champion. You know, we talked about that last week. You know, he's only in that spot because WWE thinks that getting an Indian over will be great for TV ratings in India. We'll see if there's any evidence of that. Don't think there is. But anyway, it's an experiment, so we've got to live through it. And Randy Orton at this stage is only in it for the money, as far as I'm concerned. He just clearly can't be asked. He's just there going through the motions and just doing whatever they tell him to do, and then goes home to St. Louis and enjoys his money. Yeah. But this was just a complete waste of time. You know, and this was, don't forget, a match for the WWE Championship, the title that has been in this company as an ever-present title since its formation 54 years ago. And in its entire history, I don't think the title has ever had less prestige or felt less prestigious than it is right now, because it's around the waist of a champion that is completely undeserving of the belt, who's feuding with somebody who clearly can't be bothered. So it just makes for a feud that nobody cares about, nobody wants to see, nobody wants to see it continue. You know, and at least thankfully it looks like that might be the case, that we are now finally able to put to bed Mahal and Orton as a feud. It was a terrible feud, terrible match.
Yep.
And as you say, the only single highlight was Kali. I really feared for him trying to climb the cage with his legs being in the condition they are. But he managed to get halfway up and did what he had to do to allow Jinder Mahal to climb over the second cage and retain the belt, and mercifully put an end to the match. And therefore the show as well.
It actually looked like Kali was a champion at one point, because he kept lifting the belt. Yeah. I think he was enjoying that little 10 minutes in the sunshine.
That's right, yeah. Kind of had flashbacks to when he did hold the belt a few years ago. But I mean, I don't think he was on SmackDown as well, was he?
No, he wasn't. I think that was just a one-off appearance. It was one of them where... Obviously, yeah. It caught the crowd and everything, but hopefully that is it. That is the last time we'll ever see a Punjabi prison match, or at least another decade before we can stomach one again, because it was absolutely woeful. And look, Jinder's he's put everything into this, and fair play to him for the way that he's approaching it. He's trying his hardest, you know, he's trying his heart out, but the way he's being booked is in the eyes of everyone, he's being perceived as a complete jobber, and he's come from nowhere, and he is limited in the ring. He is absolutely limited, and that is why that right now he is he's not a deserving champion. And it's not a slight on him, his abilities or his career or anything. It's just he's come from a position of nowhere. It's been stuck on him like you said, you know, in an attempt, in a commercial attempt to try and hit an audience. And it's a crude move, really. I think for me, you want to engage a massive audience, give them exciting television, give them exciting shows, and you'll engage them regardless of, you know, what color, creed or nationality your champion may be. If your television's exciting and it's engaging, it'll bring fans in.
Well, yeah, the beauty of wrestling is it's a universal language, and you know, you can watch a wrestling match from wherever you are in the world, and you can still get into it, still understand it, still relate to it, and still enjoy it. You know, that's what makes it, that's part of the reason why wrestling is so unique, and it's got this crossover appeal around the world.
Yeah, every corner of the globe.
Oh, yeah. And there's not many sports that can genuinely say that. There's very few sport. I mean, wrestling isn't sport, but it's certainly presented like a sport. And there's not many genuine sports that have true global appeal. Football is one of the very, very few. And you've got one or two other sports like tennis that are popular globally, yet are the preserve of the middle classes predominantly, whereas, you know, pro wrestling has got appeal across classes, across races and nationalities, as you say. And that's why, you know, it's an experiment that they've tried. I feel it's been a failure. I suppose they'll see the ratings as the true litmus test in terms of whether the decision to go with Mahal as a world champion was the right thing to do. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, they need to get the title off him onto somebody more deserving, and then finally turn SmackDown into the work rate show it needs to be and it should be, because that's what the strength is of a number of the top people on that roster. You know, it should be about having, you know, the best wrestling product the WWE's got to offer. And there's certainly the talent there to be able to do that regularly, week to week, like it used to be when Paul Heyman booked the show some 14, 15 years ago, when pretty much every week on SmackDown, you'd have a kick-ass match. And there's no reason why they can't get back to that.
Absolutely. And you mentioned that they've certainly got the talent. They've certainly got the roster capable of delivering if they could just get the other ingredients right. I mean, so that was Battleground. It was woeful. There's no two ways about it. It was a terrible, terrible show. It was, like I said, look, that was it. I cancelled my subscription. I may well, you know, take it back out again. I may well resubscribe for SummerSlam. But I just felt like that's it. I've got to make a stand. I can't justify spending £10 a month right now after watching that. So let's see what SummerSlam brings. I mean, from a negative, you know, such a negative that was Battleground, positives this week, more without a shadow of doubt, is Raw and SmackDown. The TV's been better this week. And, I mean, it's like night and day in terms of SmackDown from what it's been the past couple of months to what it was this week, especially following such a terrible show. I felt it really, really had to deliver something. And in fairness, it absolutely did. This was more like a SmackDown show from a few months ago.
Yeah, no, it was. You know, some of the storylines had more purpose, had more direction. Obviously, the return of Chris Jericho was a big boost. Opened up the show with a surprise return. And that was good to see. And obviously, he plays no small part in the main event as well, which was one of the best matches we've seen on SmackDown all year. So the start and finish to the show, with some good stuff in between, made it certainly one of the best SmackDowns we've seen in recent times. So, you know, that's the sort of trajectory that they need to be on. And
the US title back on AJ Styles as well.
Absolutely, yeah. And that was another slight minor surprise that you know, he got the title back so quickly, but that was good to see, and it'll be interesting to see who ends up defending that title against. It might be Kevin Owens again at SummerSlam, and if it is, I'm hoping that you know, if Owens isn't injured and if he is fit, that they can certainly do themselves justice second time round to make up for the disappointment that was their match at the Battleground show. So you know, that was also interesting to see as well.
Yeah, and I do like it when they start to, where, you know, during the show they'll book matches for the following week. You know, I think the WWE has long been in this habit of going into a show with nothing announced, you know, nothing ahead of time. There's nothing there to hook you in, and it's all about, we'll hook you in from the start of the show onwards. And it's, I like that, you know, that whole thing. It's, I suppose it's a traditional thing that you'll always set a big match up for the next week. There's a reason why you'd want to come back and watch next week. So, you know, they're already booked right next week. You know, we know we're going to have AJ Styles and Kevin Owens in a US title match. And we know that we're going to have Nakamura and John Cena in a number one contenders match. So they're already, there's the hook. I like the idea of doing that. And then you can add more when you get to the show, but always setting something up for the next week. I think it's one of the fundamentals.
Oh yeah, no, it totally is. And, you know, it goes back to one of the things we were discussing on last week's show, which was that you know, I feel that there needs to be this focus on episodic TV. And one of the things I discussed was about whether Vince wants to make TV a bit more soap opera-like, with greater emphasis on storylines. And certainly we do see increasing amount of that on Raw. And, you know, in fairness to them, that has actually been working pretty well. You know, it's not as if the Raw in-ring product and, you know, match quality has seen a drastic increase and improvement. But what we have seen is the storylines certainly tighten up, and you know, some of them are pretty good. And you know, the stuff at the top of the roster on Raw, especially, has been very good, which obviously resulted in one of the best opening segments to Raw that we've seen in 2017, which was a great way to set up what will be the main event of SummerSlam.
Yeah, I was going to actually ask for your comments on that, because I have to agree. I thought it was a really good opener to the show, getting them out there, building it up. Again, it was something we, you know, was discussed on the show a couple of weeks back. We speculated, look, what they should do here, go for a fatal four-way at SummerSlam. You know, it keeps everyone involved. You've got enough there between the three of them to keep things interesting on TV without having to bring Brock Lesnar onto your screen every week. And it's a way of potentially moving the championship over to someone else without, in the eyes of some, harming either Braun Strowman or Brock Lesnar if it's Joe or Reigns that walk away with the title, because you can still protect people yet work it well in a fatal four way. And given the rumors beginning to circulate in the past few days about Lesnar potentially having a match with John Jones in the UFC, you know, who knows, maybe we will be seeing the title change at SummerSlam.
Well, absolutely, yeah, that's right. And the fact that it's a four-way now certainly creates plenty of intrigue. And it genuinely, if it will be a title switch, can go any of three different directions. And each of those directions will be an interesting one, and also potentially quite an exciting one as well. When you imagine seeing the belt around Strowman's waist, and you know, he's somebody who's getting over more and more week by week. And, you know, he's certainly right up Vince's street. There's no question about that. And you know, if that's the case, then it will certainly open up the door for more larger-than-life characters like Strowman. possibly at the expense, though, of smaller guys like Finn Balor, who unfortunately on Raw didn't come out of it looking any greater, really. In fact, lost by lost in his contest against Elias Samson, and that is a feud that just does him no favours, especially given how high he was riding only a year ago, or just under a year ago at SummerSlam.
Yeah, it is very, very curious, I think I'll say, is the booking of Finn Balor. So maybe, hopefully, they've got something in mind, and this is where they're going to move past it, and they're going to move him on to something bigger, or maybe they've got ideas of they want to move his character along somehow. I don't know, but certainly, you know, for all the negatives, at least we have a positive to end the show with, and you know, and I'm not just one of those, you know, wrestling fans who bitches and whines and moans about everything, because like you say, you know, there's so much talent there and it should be good. It is frustration at the end of the day. It's frustration because we know there's so much potential on the roster and it's just not being utilized at the moment. But I've got to say, more based on this week's television, I think the build to SummerSlam initially looks promising, though.
Oh, I agree. SummerSlam is their second biggest show of the year, and you know, it'll be an important one for them to move the needle where network subscriptions are concerned. Even though, like it is, I'm sure, as you'll find out, I'm sure soon enough, there will be offers for people to trial the WWE Network for a month for free. Or people that have unsubscribed to try and entice them back to have 30 days on the house. But you know, from that perspective, WWE will certainly make more of an effort in the next 3 and a bit weeks to build up SummerSlam into being a special show. It will certainly go 4 hours in terms of the main card, and at least an hour, possibly even 2 hours for the pre-show. So, you know, we can look forward to another mammoth event in just over 3 weeks. And obviously, they will tie up that weekend with an NXT takeover event as well. So, you know, I certainly think that if nothing else, TV should see a slight improvement, if not a drastic one, because SummerSlam is an important show, and they can't afford for that to be panned in the same way that Battleground was. So I'm certainly confident that TV will be pretty decent.
Yeah, it certainly can't be as bad as Battleground. I certainly hope not anyway. That's us for tonight, though. But before we head off, Mo, is there anything you want to get across to the audience? Anything you want them to look out for? Are you scribing at the moment?
So we talked about ratings. So I've got an article which I'm finalising the next couple of days. Or, to be more honest, I haven't actually started, but I'll be leaving it last minute and getting it done for Total Wrestling in the next week or so. And that'll be talking about the WWE's future with Sky. They've had, as you pointed out earlier, an extremely long relationship with Sky going back to around 1989. And I'll be looking at whether that will have a longer future beyond the end of that deal in about 2 years' time. So that's another interesting one to keep an eye on. And on top of that, the other plug I just want to quickly squeeze in, as listeners will be aware, I started a second podcast with one of the more prominent members of the Anfield Index Empire, one Dave Hendrick. Well, that podcast, MMA Monthly, is making its longer way to return in the coming weeks with Mr. H himself. And that will be just in time to talk about what will be the biggest event of the year in Mayweather versus McGregor. So really looking forward to resurrecting that with Dave Hendrick.
Yeah, I look forward to listening to that. And we will, of course, retweet your article via the Pro Wrestling Index Twitter account, which is at PW_index. But that wraps things up for this edition of the Pro Wrestling Index right here on the AI podcast channel. Thanks, as always, to yourself, Mo, for joining me and helping me through going over what was a dreadful pay per view.
I know it was painful having to relieve all of that, but it had to be done.
It was painful. But at least we've got some positives to look forward to. So, yeah, my thanks to Mo for joining me. And our thanks to all of you, the lovely listeners, for hitting that the download button and listening to us every week, because we appreciate each and every one of you. And please don't be afraid to get in touch with us via the at PW_index on Twitter. So until next week, from me, Andy Wills, though, it's bye-bye now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford Tough, Built Ford Proud.